Oh, hi, everybody. You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of The Disaster Artist.
Los Angeles, everybody wants to be star. You have to be the best and never give up.
When I get up on stage in front of people, all I can think about is, what if they laugh at me? You, man, you're fearless. I want to feel that, too.
I don't care. I'll do it.
You and me, we both have this dream.
Yeah, I guess we do.
Hey, we'll be famous. We'll show them. Watch out, here we go. To be or not to be.
It's not gonna happen for you. Not in a million years.
But after that? This town, Greg. They don't want me.
Wish we could just make our own movie.
A great idea. So there's this guy, Johnny, a true American hero, to be played by me. He has it all. Good luck, many friends, and also maybe Johnny is vampire. We'll see.
This set of the alleyway looks exactly like the real alleyway.
That's right.
Well, why don't we just shoot in the real alleyway?
Because it's a real Hollywood movie.
No, yeah, sounds good.
Okay,
action.
I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
What the f- it doesn't work if you're looking at the camera.
And then this beautiful girl, anything for my princess. She betrayed him.
And then this guy, Johnny.
He go crazy. Nobody respect my vision.
You are a villain.
I do this whole movie for you, Greg. You are tearing me apart, Lisa.
Cut.
Why you cut, Sandy? This is great. This is real acting.
If you're gonna writhe around with the dress, maybe do it before you shoot yourself in the head and blow your brains out.
I disagree.
You're really gonna make this thing?
We are going to die together.
Tommy, this is not necessary.
No, very necessary. I need to show my ass to sell this movie.
I think you're aiming a little bit.
I am what I am. Just do the scene.
Why is he having sex with her belly button? He knows where her vagina is, right?
All
right,
everybody, you were just listening to the trailer for The Disaster Artist, and the story is as follows. Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero become friends after meeting each other in an acting class in San Francisco. Hoping to achieve Hollywood stardom, Sestero moves to Los Angeles and signs on to appear in his buddy's project. Financed with his own money, Wiseau writes, directs, and stars in The Room, a critically maligned movie that becomes a cult classic. The film is starring James Franco, Dave Franco, Seth Rogen, Alison Brie, Ari Grainer, Josh Hutcherson, and Jackie Weaver. It is directed by James Franco and written by Scott Neustander and Michael H. Weber. Joining me for this review, I have Will Mavity. Oh, hi, Will.
He's cranky today. Hi, Matt. I can't do it without sounding German. This is apocalyptic. Hi, everybody.
Anyway, how's your sex life?
Your sex life. Have you ever... No, okay, we'll talk about our favorite The Room moments as time goes on.
I can tell you right now, I can tell you the answer to whatever it was you're about to ask was, I did not.
No, I think a scene that comes up in the movie, my all-time favorite moment, and maybe my favorite scene in the film, because honestly, I feel like this review is going to be just a lot of us reliving scenes we love, is the whole that she got beat up so bad she ended up in a hospital on Carrera Street.
what a story, Mark.
So that's my roundabout way of saying this is one of the funniest movies I've seen all year.
Yes. I think it might be my favorite comedy of 2017. And I don't know how much of that is because I love The Room or how much of that is simply because I love the process of filmmaking. Or I think that this is just one of those movies, Will, where objectivity and subjectivity just have to go flying out the window here. And I just have to embrace the fact that there are a lot of factors in this movie that are swaying me towards a more positive review and reaction to this.
Yeah, so let's be clear. Let's get this out in the open. Technically, it's not a very well-made film.
I agree with that, yes.
The camera work, I have no idea why they chose to shoot everything handheld. The lighting's murky.
But is this by design?
You know, I would like to say that, but there's nothing that tells me that is the case.
Well, let's put it this way. James Franco's not the best director in the world. I think we can all agree upon that. But can we also agree that this is also his best directorial effort
so far? Oh, absolutely. You know, he gets props because presumably it was him who got all these cameos. And he gets props for bringing together, I wouldn't call it an ensemble cast per se, but a hell of an impressive cast for just many, many small roles. So Franco, yeah, that's all him. And Franco the actor was fantastic.
Oh, this is the best he's been since 127 Hours, bar none.
Yeah, and I would say just generally probably his second best performance ever.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to say I think it might be his best, but I think that, I mean, they're two very, very different types of performances. And then there is that crowd out there that's like, Spring Breakers, you know?
Yeah, he's fun in that. But I don't think, this Tommy Wiseau comes close, but it still doesn't necessarily have the emotional depth of an Aaron Ralston performance. But part of the reason this film works so well is I went into it expecting that this thing was just basically going to be Franco and Seth Rogen and their friends just making fun of Tommy Wiseau. And instead, it's a very loving, emotionally complex portrayal of this man, of someone who's very lonely and is trying to do something great. And it's so much more effective as a result.
You know, it's interesting because in a way, it reminded me of Ingrid Goes West from earlier this year. A character that's very, very lonely. I don't know. Is it safe to say that Tommy Wiseau is sick in the head?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Good. I wanted to make sure I was politically correct in saying that. And it also deals in this attachment that he has towards another person who shows him the slightest bit of attention. You know, he just latches on to Greg, who's played by James's brother Dave in this, and it's like all of a sudden everything that Greg wants, Tommy's willing to provide. Anything that, you know, he wants to take a trip to Los Angeles in the middle of the night, you know, to James Dean's burial site where he not burial site, but like, you know, where he got in a car accident and died. You know, Tommy's like, 3 hours, no problem. We do it, you know? And it's like, you know, what? We're going to drive all the way out there right now? Come on, man. You know, it's just, and it's creepy. It's really genuinely creepy at times.
He's almost also a manic pixie dream girl. You know, he's like this malevolent cross between the manic pixie dream girl who helps the kind of stoic male character find himself, and then Forrest Gump.
We're getting into like a very quasi heterosexual, homosexual, I don't even know what to call it, relationship here between
the film
characters.
I would argue the film is a love story, you know, in the same way that the TV show Hannibal is. It's never made explicit, but it's pretty clear that Tommy Wiseau was attracted to Greg Sestero and that influenced his reasons for
making the movie, ultimately.
Yeah,
I understand that The Room is not so much based on, you know, the relationship of Greg Sestero as the Disaster Artist wants you to believe it is. I believe that there are other events in Tommy's life that influenced it. But I do like that, you know, for example, Dave Franco meets at one point his real life wife, by the way, very, very jealous, Allison Brie. She's gorgeous and very talented. And that causes a little bit of a rift there where all of a sudden Tommy feels like he's being replaced. And it, you know, they really do a good job of like working that into lines of dialogue about The Room itself, because The Room is all about this guy who thinks he's got this person in his life. And then all of a sudden, you know, he finds out that she betrays him, you know, and that's the crux of The Room. And everyone betray me. I'm fed up with this world, you know.
Fuck it all. Yeah.
Don't touch me, motherfucker.
How many times have you seen The Room?
Oh, let me tell you something. I've seen that movie so many times since my first initial viewing in 2009. It is very ridiculous. But I'm sure many people also are like this in a way, because this movie, I've never seen a movie like The Room. I've never, ever, ever seen a movie that was so bad it was this good. Like, I've seen bad movies that were just bad. You know, yeah, I've never seen a bad movie that was this enjoyably bad. Hands of Manos maybe comes close.
Well, and Plan 9 from Outer Space and Birdemic for sure.
Oh, Birdemic is freaking awesome.
Oh my God. Now we need to see a follow-up. But going back to The Room, it was... The relationship between them is very well fleshed out. And I do think that it isn't taking that much creative liberty, that did heavily influence... I mean, obviously they needed to streamline things to make it function as a screenplay, but I do think...
Yeah, like the ending of the film, for example.
Right.
Like, that did not happen on the same freaking night, Tommy having this revelation about what he had created, you know? That took a long time, like years.
Did you read the book?
No. I've been told by friends who have read the book, like, who have said to me, oh, well, did you know? Like, did you know that this happened?
They toned down the homoeroticism for the film between Tommy and Greg.
Oh, really? Oh.
Tommy reportedly cracked his door opens a lot of night and just, like, implying that Greg should come in and would say things like, somebody's chicken. So...
Chip, 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 chip.
You know, there's so much... Once again, there's so much of Tommy's life that comes into this film. It's... I was impressed that Nussauder and Weber were able to make this Tommy Wiseau, who is a mutant in that he does not behave like a human being, still feel somewhat sympathetic.
Yeah, no, he's socially inept, and, you know, you have to wonder how much of that is, pity, and how much of it is admiration. There is a lot to admire about a guy who... is constantly told, you'll never make it, you can't do it. And whether by intention or not, the end justifies the means here. The guy is a success.
He is the quintessential American dream story in a perverse way. It's like Nightcrawler. You know, it is the guy who comes from nothing and makes a name for himself. So one of my questions is, the book does give a little more backstory about Tommy Wiseau. Do you like that they just left it with no one knows where his money came from, no one knows where he's from or how old he is? Because the book, there, you can get an idea of where Tommy came from. He probably had to sell his body when he was a young man to make money. He hustled to make his fortune. I mean, he's still mysterious, but do you like that they left that ambiguous, or do you wish we had gotten a little bit more of who was Tommy Wiseau?
As I was leaving the theater, I did have this feeling of, I wish I'd learned something coming out of this movie that I previously didn't know before. You know, I felt like I didn't learn anything new. I felt like I got, like, a very good representation, great entertainment, and a class A performance from Franco out of it. But I didn't feel like I learned anything new about the production making of The Room or... you know, about this relationship. I got to see it fleshed out, but from a facts bullet point list, I didn't learn anything. Mind you now, here's the thing. If they only know one of the three questions, you know, how old is he? Where does he get his money from? And what was the other thing again? How old is he? Where does he get his money from? And
where are you from?
Where is he from? Right. Those are the three questions.
New Orleans.
Yeah. New Orleans. If they only give us the answer to one of those and they didn't give us the answers to two because they just simply don't know, but they know only one, I wouldn't have liked that. So I'm okay with not getting an answer in the film for either one.
Okay.
And I think it does leave the movie on a interesting note, at least, you know, that here's this guy, the unlikely success story, like you said, and yet still we don't know anything about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And on that level, I think it is ultimately a pretty good adaptation. I think the book is... There's so many funny anecdotes, and it is fascinating to see how he made it come together. There's little details, like he wanted to have the film considered part of SAG, and SAG was like, fuck you, we don't want to take you. So He had a Korean leather import business on the side, and he just
I'm sorry,
shot...
I'm just imagining SAG just being like, fuck you, we don't want to take you.
Oh, I assume it was probably not unlike Judd Apatow's character's interaction, but Tommy goes, and he has a Korean leather business on the side, and he just shoots three advertisements that have him just, like, walking down a staircase and speaking about Korean leather, and use those as his three credits to make him eligible for SAG, and that's how he became SAG. Like, the real-life story is so interesting, and we did lose some of that in favor of just beat after beat of hilarious moments, but I think it made for a more crowd-pleasing film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there is consequently, there are a few things that leave me a little dissatisfied, but it's so goddamn funny that...
Yeah.
I can't resent it.
You know, probably one of my favorite laugh out loud moments, and just going back to Judd Apatow for a minute, like that scene you were talking before about like cameos in this movie, the part where like the waitress like comes over and she's like, is everything okay, sir? And he's like, yeah, he just got through two fucking acts of Shakespeare before you got over here. Like,
oh, you know, this movie has so many wink, wink, nudge, nudge moments. The agent that Judd Apatow's character talks about is actually Judd Apatow's agent in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Kramer. Like, oh my God.
Did you notice the casting agents? When he goes, when Greg goes to the casting agency?
To Iris Burton Agency? Yeah, who played them?
Oh, shit. Was it Sharon Stone or Michelle Pfeiffer?
Oh, it was Sharon Stone, yeah.
Yeah, it was Sharon Stone. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you had what's Bob Odenkirk as that one drama teacher. You know,
Bryan
just,
Cranston.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston as Bryan
Cranston.
Well,
I'm really glad they did not... have him, you know, a continuity error, and they didn't have him say, oh, we have this part, I need you to play like this, you know, this young meth dealer. I was like cringing. I thought they were gonna say it, you know what I mean, because Dave Franco with the beard and everything, you know, kind of strikes you
he
as the
Jesse
Pinkman type
6 years too early.
Right So I'm really glad that was not a moment to be like, oh, let's put some pop culture reference in, you know what I mean, because that would have just been so stupid. Or maybe I'm stupid for even thinking it.
The cameos were executed well. Like, they were admittedly distracting, but in a comedy, that's okay. Like, having, what's his face? Zac Efron as Chris R. That was so funny.
Oh, my God. That was amazing. Why is his name Chris R? Why can't I just call him Chris?
And that was a nice bit of structuring, because as far as the adaptation goes... Putting a scene that randomly happened in the film late into the shoot at the very beginning of the shoot is a nice way to, you know, mess with the audience of, oh, is this going to be good? That's pretty impressive. That's the first thing they shot. And so you can see the characters come on board, and then obviously their expectations just go downhill from there. Like, Weber and Nussbaum deserve, in a thin year like this, they deserve their nomination.
I totally agree. I'm not going to sit here and say, I disagree. I'm just going to keep doing like Tommy Wiseau lines the rest of this review.
Well, at the end of the day, there isn't that much as a film to analyze about it.
That great idea.
I didn't love Dave Porter's score. I thought it was bland. And since we're talking about Breaking Bad, I love his work in Breaking Bad so much. This let me down. It felt like the most generic indie movie score imaginable. But I did
love... But when it gets to the third act, though, and you have what is, for me, one of the best scenes of the year, or at least most memorable, and that is the premiere.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I felt the score really came together. That's when James Franco's performance came full circle for not just myself, but for the audience members, too. Because... the audience that I saw this with, Will, I don't know about you, my theater sold out.
Not oh, yeah.
A single
well,
seat
I
was
saw
empty.
It. No, you know who I saw it with? Franco came to my screening, but like two-thirds of the audience was the crew of the film.
Oh, wow.
They were, you know, they were all cheering. It was a combination of Room diehards and then people who worked on the film and Taika Waititi for some reason. so I had a great... And that was, you know, the... people like with the Rocky Horror, they shout out lines to the actors on screen. So my audience, I could not have seen it with a better audience. They, you know, he's like, oh, you're looking so sexy in this dress. And then people are like, what dress? And this music, what music? It was spectacular. People threw spoons at mine.
Oh, that's amazing. That's that. Yeah, I had people that were like laughing at things that, like, there was like one guy laughing at one point at something, and then like some of the audience was like, "What's he laughing at?" While other then members of the audience were joining in on the laughter because it was like an in joke from the original room. So you could definitely tell like who were fans and who were people who were just seeing this movie for the first time with like maybe very little or no context. But when they're all like uproariously laughing, seeing the actual clips from the room play out, and they're watching like Seth Rogen in the audience laughing, Jackie Weaver, Lisa, everybody's like laughing, watching this creation that Tommy Wiseau has made. And then when they probably one of the most effective cuts, literally of the year, is the cut to James Franco's face. And tears are coming down his face. And it's not tears of joy, it's tears of sadness. An audible hush just went over my whole crowd. Like, everybody just stopped laughing and everybody just went silent. It's honestly, Will, for me, that might have been a very singular experience, but that's like one of the best, most cinematic moments I've had all year that, you know, I don't think I could have gotten, you know, watching it at home or anything like that. It was just incredible.
Franco does so much with his eyes. Like, on top of, you know, keeping them
the lazy
frozen.
Eye.
Yeah,
you know how hard that is to do?
The lazy eye. But on top of that, just the sadness he communicates with his eyes. That was extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, like, he managed to do a obvious tick, but then also make it feel natural. Like, he did so much with his eyes. That was far and away the best part of his performance.
Did the performance get grating for you after a while?
Sometimes it just felt like mimicry. I will admit that. Generally, no.
Yeah, because you could definitely hear there are times where James Franco's like normal voice starts to creep in a little bit.
Oh, for sure. There were definitely some scenes where he just completely turned into James Franco. I mean, like, I never once felt like I'm watching Tommy Wiseau, not James Franco.
Oh, no, I actually disagree. I really did feel that people talk about this year how Gary Oldman is Winston Churchill. James Franco is Tommy Wiseau. Like, this is a transformative performance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is and he's very, very good. I generally did feel shades of James Franco in there, except there is a cameo with Tommy Wiseau where he interacts with Franco. Kind of
after
spoilers,
the credits,
not,
yeah.
Yeah, and in that moment, they were almost indistinguishable. That was one of his best mimicry moments. But just, even if he didn't always completely come across as Tommy Wiseau, just as a base performance, and that's more important, I think. It's very, because, you know, like, a lot of actors can mimic. It's very hard to make an emotionally real performance, and I think that's what Franco did.
I think he does take it, like, a step beyond, resulting in still what I think is one of the best performances of the year, whether I had seen The Room or not. Because to me, and you may disagree, I did feel James Franco disappear into this role, minus the times where the voice kind of came back maybe a little bit, maybe in moments where he was shouting. I definitely think of that line where he tells, like, Greg, you know, nobody respect my vision.
My
you
vision.
Know, it's like
the scene where he's walking around with his balls out.
Oh, God. Yes.
Oh, my God. And the amazing way they turn scenes like that are just so outrageous into legitimately emotional and important moments, too, I thought that was impressive. Like, that's such an absurd scene. He's walking around with his nuts out, but it's also one of the most important emotional moments of the film.
Can we also give praise to Seth Rogen, who I freaking love when Seth Rogen plays a role straight.
Yeah.
It doesn't go for silly antics. Like, he was so funny in this.
The scene in the bank, just the line delivery where he walks up, he cashes the check, and then he's like, went through, and they're like, yes. And he's like, wow, did not see that coming. Just the deadpan of that is so funny.
Yeah, I definitely want to give him a shout out and some credit there. Dave Franco, a very limited actor. I really don't like a lot of stuff that I've ever really seen him in, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I kind of dug him in The Little Hours earlier this year. Did you see that one?
The Nun movie? No, I didn't.
Oh, you should check that one out. That movie's really funny. We'll probably make my comedy list for the end of year, I would say. But this might be the best I think I've seen him, you know?
Yeah, he when he finally snaps, he's impressive. I didn't.
Yeah, that scene when they're playing football, right?
Yeah. I didn't necessarily think he was the completely right choice, just even physically, for Greg Sestero. Like, Dave Franco is a good-looking dude, but Greg Sestero's a strapping 6'2", you know, like, specimen. He's got a very imposing presence. I wouldn't say that's Dave Franco.
Well, there's definitely that factor of, you know, James has taken on this very demanding lead role that requires a lot of himself as an actor. He's also directing the movie. Why not cast your friends and family? You know, to give you like that support on set. You know what I mean?
I get why he did it. I think maybe he wasn't the perfect casting choice. But yeah, this is probably the best performance I've seen him give. And to his credit, you know, he got pretty buff for the film, too. I mean, he kind of looked like Greg Sestero. And he does have as good a moments, as we said, when he breaks
when he grows
down.
Out the beard and he's wearing the red shirt.
That yeah, he
wears,
does
like,
look
in the
like
room.
Him there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's the those are the scenes where I'm like, okay, I see it now. But his face is not as thinned out. You know, he's not as tall, like you said. Where Franco, the hair.
He does. He sure as hell looks like Tommy.
It's scary, actually. How there were times where I'm like, oh my god, like physically he looks just like Tommy. You know, it's like insane. It's absolutely amazing. Okay, so Will, I had, like I was saying earlier, I had a really tough time grading this movie, because the movie is a comment on art and a comment on is what is considered bad truly good, and is what's really good considered really bad? Does it really matter?
And it feels a little hypocritical to give it a grade.
And this is why I did not give it a grade on my written review on Next Best Picture. I wrote my review, and all of a sudden it became less about the movie and more of a comment on how one judges art. And then the idea of separating the art from the artist, and the fact that this is called The Disaster Artist, and how The Room could be considered the ultimate piece of disaster art. You know, there's a lot of meta in this movie that really kind of gets you thinking a lot about, honestly, like, what the hell are we doing here? Like, judging someone else's work of art. The fact that Tommy brought these people together, shot this movie with his own money, got it edited, got it, you know, like, got it in the theaters.
And made a profit. Let's be clear. He's made millions on this film.
Yeah. Paid for that billboard with his own money, kept it up in Hollywood on the highway for years just so that people would come see this movie, kept paying for theaters to show it. Like, he has made millions because of his tenacity and his hard work and his dedication. How in God's name am I going to rate The Room with a negative review? And in turn, because The Disaster Artist is so much about The Room and the making of it, how in the world can I then turn around to The Disaster Artist and decide to give it a grade?
And, you know, it's funny, because you and I always get mad when we feel like people aren't objective in reviews, you know, like, oh, well, there are certain baseline things. Is it technically well-made, et cetera, et cetera. And then you're right. I can only be subjective here. It does not meet the base criteria of being a technically well-made film. Normally, a film with its technical aspects, I would give a 6 or something. But this made me so happy, so well-acted on Franco's part, and just so entertaining. And as you're right, you know, it is in its own unique work of art. I will join you. I will not give it a grade, but I would give it a good one.
I am with you for that. And I can tell people that my grade for this is actually out there somewhere. I just have it hidden. And you'll have to do some digging in order to find it. But it's definitely not on the review page.
It's on his Letterboxd.
Hey. I'm fed up with this world.
Goodbye. He shoots himself in the face twice. Maybe writhe after. No, did you stop writhing after you shot yourself in the face?
No, this is real acting. It's a real Hollywood movie.
It's bullshit.
I did not hit her. I did not. All right, Will. Foregoing the grade. Oscar potential. Hit me.
I think Franco and adapted screenplay are absolutely going to get in, but largely because their fields are weak, but they're worthy.
Do me a favor, please. Do your absolute best so I don't have to, because I feel like I'll just get angry. to tell everyone that's listening why this is not going to get a Best Picture nomination.
At the end of the day, it is something of a niche film. I can't see many of the Academy members, even with a new voting body, who were too elitist to go for something like The Dark Knight because it had genre trappings, who will bring themselves to go for something that's not nearly as well made and is just straight comedy, basically. At the end of the day, this is about as far from an Academy movie as is possible, and the only reason it's going to get some attention is because the two categories it's going to contend in are very weak this year. That being said, Hollywood loves movies about itself. I think it'll continue to show up. I think it'll show up at the Globes. I think it'll get plenty of Critics Award nominations. I don't see a Best Picture nomination.
James Franco is a lock for the Golden Globe. Do you share that sentiment?
Not a lock, but I think he's... I think it's very likely he'll win.
Who do you think beats him?
Kaluuya, maybe.
Get off. You need to get off of that. That's not happening.
It's probably Franco.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think it'll be Hugh Jackman.
Well, in any event. All right. Any final thoughts on The Disaster Artist, Will?
I really enjoyed it. Go see it. You'll have a lot of fun.
Do you think that they need to see The Room in order to enjoy The Disaster Artist?
It helps. It's not necessary. At the very least, I would go watch some clips beforehand.
Yeah, just type in The Room Best on YouTube. Watch the first video that appears on the top of the YouTube search engine. It's just, you know, a video that says something along the lines of the best of The Room. It's like 10 minutes long, and it just gives you this full spectrum of everything that is unbelievable about this movie. Like, there's like continuity errors. It's like, where the hell did this guy come from in this shot? You know what I mean? And like, they recast an actor midway through the film. Like, plot lines never come back. There's like no explanation for why they disappear. Yo, Jackie Weaver. Can we talk about Jackie Weaver?
Yeah, she's just like, I don't understand. It never goes anywhere.
But then Jackie has like probably one of the best lines of the whole movie and like one of the best moments.
Oh, where she's
sitting around the table eating lunch.
She loves acting.
Yeah, and Dave Franco says something along the lines of like, why do you guys do it? If, you know, like, why do you guys put up with it? And Jackie Weaver just sells the moment so beautifully in that very sweet Jackie Weaver, you know, sort of way about how they're actors and this is what they love to do. And any bad day on a film set is still better than any other day doing anything else.
All right. On that note, I've got to head out, but you can find me on Twitter at Mavericks Movies.
And you can find me at Next Best Picture, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. You can subscribe to us on SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and on CastBox. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review over there. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. And we will see you all. Oh, hi, everybody. Next time.